This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com. The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty, and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Welcome to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the show that explores the background of Tolkien's amazing world from the very beginning. They go by many names: goblins, orcs, Uruks, the things that go bump in the night, the scary monsters of Tolkien's world, or the corrupted individuals who prefer violence and meanness and darkness and destruction. This is the first time in The Hobbit that we encounter goblins. And in The Hobbit, they're called goblins. They're not called orcs or Uruks. They go by an older, more common name for the kinds of monsters that go bump in the night. And that's exactly what they do here when the party encounters them. They go bump in the night and clap, snap, grip, grab, pinch, nab. And for as dark and vile and as plain as it may seem, these seem like the black against the white, that this is the darkness compared to the light, that these creatures are wholly irredeemable. But as we've discussed before, in Tolkien's works, nothing is ever quite as black and white as we seem to try to remember it to be. There's something more here. And yes, goblins are terrible. They're mean and violent, and they will do terrible things to whoever they want. They are not the good guys, but they are not completely devoid of humanity. They speak. They have language. They have song. They have community. They make things. And even in this event, in the Misty Mountains, in The Hobbit, in this earliest engagement with goblins, and, well, I guess you could say hobbits, because we've met goblins before in the ages of the world that predate this in the other works. But even in The Hobbit, in a book that was more focused on children, there is complexity here. So let's get into it. Let's talk about what happens in the mountain when the goblins capture the dwarves and Bilbo. So after the events of the last episode, where we talked about the cave and how they busted through the passage, well, they didn't really bust through, they slid open the doorway somehow in order to capture the dwarves and Bilbo. They are now marched deep inside the mountain. And Tolkien makes sure that we understand how deep and dark this actually is. He writes, "It was deep, deep dark, such as only goblins that have taken to living in the heart of the mountains can see through." And I think that this is an important thing to start this section out. There are no lights in this passage. There is no opportunity even for the dwarves, who are used to living underground, to be able to see here. But yet somehow the goblins have evolved or been developed to be able to see in this much darkness. The passages go on in a tangled direction, which I think is not necessarily indicative of the natural layout of these caverns. It may be, but it also might be part of the goblins and the fact that they are kind of chaotic. If they're tunneling, they're not doing it in a way like the dwarves would do, methodically planned out. They don't have that kind of tolerance for organization in the same way the dwarves do. And we'll get to a little bit more of that later. And we get this wonderful comment here. "The goblins knew their way as well as you do to the nearest post office." And I feel like this is of a time and a place. The kind of comment you would say to somebody who lives in a society where you would simply walk to the nearest post office often because you have to check your mail. We don't live in a world where we do that so much anymore. I know I could make my way to the nearest post office, but it's not like I go there all the time, right? And then we begin to get glimpses, aspects of their personalities. They were very rough. They pinched unmercifully. And the fact that they pinched here is not that they kicked or hit or slapped. They pinched unmercifully and chuckled and laughed with their horrible stony voices. And then we're reminded about how unhappy Bilbo is. And we're told to think about the time when he was picked up by the troll by his toes. And he's more unhappy now than when that happened. This is threading together a story for us. It is reminding us of the events that have happened previous. Remember when he first left and he was unhappy with the party and what was going on. And then he was a little bit more unhappy with the events trying to travel, making sure that he had his stuff when he left so quickly, being in the weather, being picked up by the trolls. Things continue to get more dire for Bilbo. It's leading to something. There's a pattern here. And of course, the bag inside of him wishes to be back in his hobbit hole by a fire. And speaking of fires, we see the glimmer of a red light before them. Notice it's red. It's not described as warm or golden or even orange. It is red. That color is not a color that most of the time you would use to describe fire. Fire is rarely red, and we know that it is a fire. We get to that point in the story. It's a large fire where all of the goblins have communed together in their central location. But the fact that it's chosen to be described as red means something. The colors usually mean things. It's not warm. It is dangerous. Red, like blood, like warning. And then we get another glimpse of this goblin culture. They begin to sing. Clap, snap, the black crack. Grip, grab, pinch, nab. And down, down to Goblin Town. You go, my lad. And it's very rhythmic. You can tell from the beginning here, it's very rhythmic. I would guess that this, in Tolkien's mind, had very little of a melody, and it was more of a chant. It was more of something you say while you are marching, while you are intimidating your enemies. And then he adds in, down, down to Goblin Town, and My Lad. And I have to think here that that was another component he added in for the target audience. I don't know that the goblins would have called where they live in this mountain Goblin Town, but I think it helps a young reader understand where they're going to. And then they add in My Lad. You wouldn't expect the dark, evil creatures to use phrases like My Lad, and yet they do. Remember the conversations that the trolls were having with each other, where they were actually talking more like working class people than like monsters. We're reminded here that as dark and terrible as these creatures are, they're still people. They use phrases like My Lad, and they sing songs. Clash, crash, crush, smash, hammer and tongs, knocker and gongs, pound, pound, far underground. Ho, ho, my lad. Swish, smack, whip, crack, batter and beat, yammer and bleat, work, work, nor dare to shirk, while goblins quaff and goblins laugh round and round, far underground, below, my lad. And I had to look up here what quaff actually means in this sentence, and I believe it is to drink, usually something hearty and alcoholic. They're talking about enjoying their time while their enemies suffer and work. They're talking about being slave drivers. And this song has its effect on Bilbo and the dwarves. It terrifies them even more. The sound echoes off the walls. I would imagine that that echo adds to the rhythmic quality of the singing. If you could imagine putting a delay on a guitar pedal and you hit a note and then you hear the note bounce back at you. Ga, 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 ga. And in this case, it would be something more like clap, 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 snap, snap, snap. It creates a rhythm, and that makes it even more terrifying and yet coordinated. Again, the goblins are people. They get to the light of the red fire, and at this point we're told this is a red fire, and there are torches along the walls, and it is full of goblins. And in this point of the story, we know that they've come not only to this central location, but that the goblins themselves don't necessarily prefer the dark. They have just adapted to it, and they can't keep torches lit on every single pathway in the mountain. But where most of them spend most of their time, they do. They prefer some light, not just complete darkness. And the goblins all start to celebrate. They laugh and they stamp and they clap. I'm sure things get pretty boring underground. And on top of it, they're seeing the opportunity here. Maybe they'll get some things from these dwarves. Maybe they will put them to work for them. Maybe they will eat them. There are lots of benefits they can get from capturing these individuals. And then we're again reminded about Bilbo's terrible situation. He is at the back of the party nearest to the whips. The ponies are already there. The packages and baggages are lying broken and open. The goblins have already gone through everything. And then we're given a very sad announcement by the narrator. I'm afraid that was the last they ever saw of those excellent little ponies. And the tragedy is explained. We're reminded about Elrond lending them the ponies and how this is actually very terrible for these poor animals, and also for the party if they were to leave the situation. They again do not have pack animals to help carry the things that they need. So they chain up the dwarves, and of course Bilbo again is at the end of the row. This is being repeated. It's reminding us of where he is among the group. And then we meet him. There, in the shadows on a large flat stone, sat a tremendous goblin with a huge head. Notice the distinction here about the size of this goblin's head. And armed goblins were standing round him, carrying the axes and the bent swords that they use. Now goblins are cruel, wicked, and bad-hearted. They make no beautiful things, but they make many clever ones. This is an important distinction. Remember when we talked about Tolkien and his concept of individuals that he knew or knew about being goblin or orc-like? All of the descriptions here can apply to those people as well. They don't make beautiful things, but they make clever ones. Usually for war or domination of others. And then we get a paragraph explaining exactly how they work. They can tunnel and mine as well as any but the most skilled dwarves. So better than most other cultures, except for the best of the dwarves. And that sentence continues, when they take the trouble, though they are usually untidy and dirty. Thus, the question about did they actually make those cave tunnels that they came through and left them kind of in disarray. Hammers, axes, swords, daggers, pickaxes, tongs, and also instruments of torture they make very well, or get other people to make to their design, prisoners and slaves that have to work till they die for want of air and light. We are seeing themes here, war, domination, slavery, and a certain level of laziness. It is not unlikely that they invented some of the machines that have since troubled the world. This sentence in particular is telling of Tolkien's perception that we still walk among goblins and orcs. Especially the ingenious devices for killing large numbers of people at once. For wheels and engines and explosions always delighted them. And also not working with their own hands more than they could help. But in those days, in those wild parts, they had not advanced, as it is called, so far. He's reinforcing here the clever and warlike nature of these individuals, and yet their laziness. And then he confirms to us that way back then, this is another one of those little nods at the connective tissue between his world and ours, that they had not advanced so far as to make weapons of mass destruction. They did not hate dwarves especially, no more than they hated everybody and everything, and particularly the orderly and prosperous. This is also very interesting. It's not that they had a thing especially against dwarves. You would think goblins tunneling underground would be kind of an antithesis to the dwarves tunneling underground, and that they would see them as competition. But no, the goblins simply hated everyone. Especially those who loved order and who were prosperous under their own actions. He keeps reinforcing for us that these are greedy, lazy, coveting, hateful creatures, much like the people he's drawn connections to. And then we get this interesting part here. In some parts, wicked dwarves. And you might be thinking, wicked dwarves? Think back to Turin's story. Think back to Mim, the petty dwarf. There are dwarves in this world who do not align themselves with the major houses, who have had to work out ways of surviving on their own. And sometimes that means working in alignment with evil forces and evil individuals. This is even more confirmation that just because you are a dwarf or a man or an elf or an orc, it's not that your race determines your actions. It's that your actions determine your alignment. A dwarf can still do bad. So does that raise the question about goblins? Can goblins do good? Well, we don't get the answer to that right here. But we do find out that even though they don't have a specific hatred for dwarves more than any other race, they did have a grudge with Thorin's people because of the war which you have heard mentioned, it says. And this leads me to believe that there is something interesting going on in goblin culture. Either the goblins or some of them have lived long enough to remember or have been involved with the war with Thorin's people. Or they have some method of retaining their history through song or story or writing it down. I think that last one is less likely. But they, again, act like a people group. And if it wasn't already hit home enough, we get another reminder about the nature of these goblins. Goblins don't care who they catch, as long as it is done smart and secret, and the prisoners are not able to defend themselves. It's about cleverly cheating in a way that puts you at advantage over other people. This is the last aspect listed here of the goblins. And now we're about to get more, because the conversation begins with the great goblin. But first we have to go thank our patrons, and we'll be right back, so don't go anywhere.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. From activewear to accessories, beauty and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
All right, thanks for checking out the show, and I hope you are enjoying our detailed look at the goblins in the cave and the situation. And I'm going to go into more detail in the bonus episode about the history of goblins. I'm going to do some research and find out a little bit more about what we can know about goblins. So if you're interested in that, check out the Patreon. This week, we've got a bunch of new people to welcome from the Patreon. We have Troy B., Christopher E., Etelit, Jut T, George B, Douglas S, XDXD, and Chris O. Welcome to the Patreon. I'm so glad that you've all decided to join us and have signed up. I hope you are enjoying your ad-free episodes and your bonus episodes, any of the things that you've got to sign up on here for, and all that stuff. You know how it all works. I do this all the time, right? Also, we have to shout out all of our VIP patrons. Thank you especially to these individuals: AK Music Lover, Apollo, Aragorn the Third, Atlee Morton, Azel Razzle, Barney D, Bo, Brandy D, Christopher E, Courtney S, Cutter Metalworks, Daniel Nightweaver, David S, David M, Divine Madman Fulcrum, George B, Gerald CFC, Gimli a Break, Gemma D, oh, I messed that one up. I was doing so well. Jezzer, Katie S, Capenna 009, Lori B, Mason Weathertop, Nick K, Nostrils of Sauron, Richard Day, Rivqua, Rosie Rose, Sam B, Saruman the Stinky, TJT, and Tour Son of Huard 97. Thank you so much, everybody. Also, we've got some new reviews to read out. Thank you for taking the time to do that. If you drop a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, I'll read it out on a future episode of the show. We have this one from Miss Sarah Highland in the United States, who writes, "This podcast is my Arkenstone. I just found this podcast last week. I am so excited to be here. Best podcast." I almost said codpast. Podcast I've ever listened to. Thank you so much, Sarah. And then we also have this one from Justina M. Smiley Face. That's actually in the name. That's really cool. Amazing 5 stars. They're from the US as well. "I've been trying to read The Silmarillion for quite some time, and it's been very difficult for me to find the time to sit down and really read this book. I knew I couldn't just purchase the audiobook because the writing is so complex. It would have been a nightmare to follow. Also, while listening in the car with my 2-year-old, this is when I came across this podcast, and it was everything I wanted and more. It's so detailed, but in a way where I can follow along and actually understand and retain who everybody is. I'm only on episode 17, and I cannot wait to get even deeper into this story and to hear your thoughts on Rings of Power. Thank you for doing this." Also, your link to the About section for the patrons is not working. I'm wondering which link you found, because that was something I think I fixed, and I went back and looked at some of the early episodes, and they seem to work. I've also added it to the general description of the show, so if anybody's looking for a link that works. Otherwise, just patreon.com/LOTRLorecast. You can just Google it. It'll come right up. But thank you all for the support. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get back to the rest of the story about the goblins and the great goblin. Here we go. Now pay specific attention to the great goblin's words and the way that he frames the conversation. Let's read through it. He says, Who are these miserable persons? Now, of course, they're miserable. They're chained up and they've been captured. But there's something about pointing it out here that seems to cast them as fundamentally being miserable. "Dwarves, and this," said one of the drivers, pulling at Bilbo's chain so that he fell forward onto his knees. "We found them sheltering in our front porch." Notice they don't know what a hobbit is. They've never seen one. And that location, that part of the cave that they were in, is their front porch. That's the main method for entering and leaving this labyrinth of tunnels. "What do you mean by it?" said the great goblin, turning to Thorin. "Up to no good, I'll warrant. Spying on the private business of my people, I guess. Thieves, I shouldn't be surprised to learn. Murderers and friends of elves, not unlikely. Come, what have you got to say?" Notice the accusations go very quickly from the beginning here. He doesn't have any information other than the fact that they were sleeping in the cave, and yet jumps to all of these assumptions. "Thorin the dwarf at your service," he replied. It was merely a polite nothing, and I have to wonder if that was a comical inclusion or just a habit of the way that Thorin introduces himself, because he is of a proper caste. "Of the things which you suspect and imagine, we had no idea at all. We sheltered from a storm in what seemed a convenient cave and unused. Nothing was further from our thoughts than inconveniencing goblins in any way whatsoever." And that was true enough, says the narrator. And it absolutely was. We know for a fact that they were taking shelter from a storm and a situation that was trying to murder them. The last thing they wanted to do was to run into a group of goblins. Said the great goblin. "So you say, might I ask what you were doing up in the mountains at all, and where you were coming from, and where you are going to? In fact, I should like to know all about you. Not that it will do you much good, Thorin Oakenshield," notice he knows the name. "I know too much about your folk already. But let's have the truth, or I will prepare something particularly uncomfortable for you. We were on a journey to visit our relatives, our nephews and nieces, and first, second, and third cousins, and the other descendants of our grandfathers, who live on the east side of these truly hospitable mountains." Notice he uses the word hospitable. He's trying to paint this as being common and pleasant, said Thorin, not quite knowing what to say all at once in a moment, when obviously the exact truth would not do at all. He reminds us here, the narrator, that they can't tell the goblins that they're going to try to claim their mountain back, to re-found a dwarven kingdom in a place that might be threatening to their kind. And then we get this moment. The great goblin gave a truly awful howl of rage. A howl of rage. That is not a phrase that you hear used very often. When he looked at it, we're not told what it is yet, "and all his soldiers gnashed their teeth, clashed their shields, and stamped. They knew the sword at once." And this leaves other questions in my mind. Similar questions to how they knew who Thorin was and his ancestry and the conflicts that they had previously had with his people. They know this sword. How? Do they have pictures of it? Do some of these goblins live long enough to have been around when this sword from two ages previous was used to fight against Morgoth's host of orcs? It had killed hundreds of goblins in its time when the fair elves of Gondolin, who we know about because we've read the Silmarillion, hunted them in the hills or did battle before their walls. They had called it Orcrist, Goblin Cleaver, but the goblins called it simply Biter. They hated it, and hated worse anyone that carried it. This is fun. This is fun from a narrative standpoint. This is fun from a, hey, this is a really great way to incorporate legendary or magical weapons into a D&D campaign, which eventually these kinds of moments and these stories would inspire. But it's also fun from the perspective of the fact that orc culture knew this weapon and weapons similar to it well enough that they feared it, and they feared the people who wielded them. It's kind of odd, right? Anybody who would have come across this weapon probably would have been killed in the middle of a battle. And I guess there are those that would have run away and yet still somehow remembered this specific sword. It sounds a little bit odd. I can't think of a situation in our real world where something like this would have happened in a battle where people were using melee weapons, swords and axes and shields and halberds and spears and things like that. And to pick one in particular that you'd be like, oh, that one I remember, unless it was wielded by a leader and it looked distinctly different. I'm thinking about somebody like Turin and the Black Sword. But in this case, it probably looks a lot like all the other elven swords of its day, and yet they remember this specific one. It's kind of odd, right? But it plays into the story in a way where it's kind of like the facts don't matter. The reality of the situation is less interesting than this idea that the goblins recognize this weapon. And not only do they recognize this weapon, but we now understand that the swords that they pulled out of that pile that Thorin and Gandalf and Bilbo wield are powerful. They have a history, and they strike fear in the hearts of these evil creatures. That's interesting. That is particularly interesting. And for as rational an individual as Tolkien was, to incorporate something that works more from a narrative and a story perspective than from a rational perspective of history really is fun here, because he's drawing from myths and legends. He's drawing from these old stories where things like this happened, regardless of how unreasonable they may have been, because it was better for the story. And then we get this. "Murderers and elf friends," the great goblin shouted. "Slash them, beat them, bite them, gnash them. Take them away to dark holes full of snakes and never let them see light again." We get a whole host of descriptions here, or at least actions that he's willing to happen to them. Slash them, cut them, beat them. That one's pretty clear. Gnash them and bite them. Eat them, maybe, and then basically put them in a hole to die. And he's so upset about this. This sword has proven to him beyond a shadow of any of his doubts that these dwarves are in league with elves, which is actually the truth. Although they didn't get this sword from Elrond, they were helped by elves. And then we get this. He rages at them. He jumps off of his seat and rushes at Thorin with his mouth open, which is an odd thing to point out. And I don't know if that means he was attempting to bite him or he was yelling, but it's not a friendly description. And then, just at that moment, all of the lights in the caves went out and the great fire went off. Poof. Into a tower of blue glowing smoke, right up to the roof, that scattered piercing white sparks all among the goblins. Thanks for listening to the Lord of the Rings Lorecast. If you'd like to learn more about other fantasy worlds, check out my other podcasts, The Elder Scrolls Lorecast, The Witcher Lorecast, and more at robotsradio.net. If you'd like to reach out, I'd love to hear from you. Send me a note on Twitter at robots_radio, or join our amazing community on the Robots Radio Discord. There are links in the show notes, or just search Robots Radio Discord, or find the link on robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time.
An O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card is the perfect gift for that hard-to-buy-for person. Give the gift of convenience from O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The best New Year's deals are happening now at Tanger Outlets. Celebrate with up to 70% off savings from Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more.
From activewear to accessories, beauty and apparel, find everything you're looking for to kickstart the new year. The clock is ticking. Hurry into Tanger Outlets to save more. Hundreds of brands, unbeatable value. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
Hey there, this is Tom from the future. I'm whispering because time travel requires whispering. I don't know if you've listened to the newest episodes in order to find this out, but with the holidays here, there is a brand new thing that Patreon is doing where you can gift subs, which is really cool because that means a few different things. First of all, if you know somebody else who enjoys this show, you can get them a sub to whatever tier you want for whatever amount of time. So if you look at certain rewards and you think it would be really cool to get them those rewards, or just being part of the community, or even just getting ad-free episodes, that's something you can give this holiday season. Also, it means that if you've been wanting to sign up for the Patreon and you haven't been able to, and you want to ask for it as a gift from somebody else, then that can work as well. So both of those things are options. All that you have to do is go to Patreon, log in, or create an account. You can just create a free account. You don't have to sign up with anybody, anyone's Patreon. And then you go to the Patreon page for this show and you choose to gift a thing. You go through all the little options and you send them a gift. It's really simple. It would be super helpful to us. And it's a fun thing to give. So hope you consider that, and I hope you have a wonderful holiday. All right, let's get back to the show.